So I remember what the Z stood for, so I asked Kate this morning, and it's Zen Engaged Dharma. But then she said...
I said it wrong.
Just now you did.
Yes,
yes, I just corrected you.
Thank you.
Made up. So, but everything's just made up anyway, so that's okay. So I'm going to talk about, I gave away a lot of my talk by saying that I've been practicing for many years. That's the first one. And I'm going to talk about how practice has supported my life and how I bring it into my life. And I've had a Buddhist meditation practice for over 25 years, and it's been a real anchor for me in the storms and a compass when I've been questioning my direction. And I feel it's allowed me to develop kind of a gradual deepening peace with myself and with my life. And it's as if each time I sit, another layer is kind of laid down, and it's easier to come back to each time. And practice has affected and informed my life in pretty much every aspect, with parenting, being a partner, being a friend, being a neighbor, a daughter, and also work. And I'm going to focus my talk today on how it's affected my work and how I bring practice into my work. So I've always had a calling, I think, from a young age, as far as I remember, to heal and to take care of people and to be of service. And I became a doctor when I was 23. And I found that journey to be very difficult and painful, that becoming a doctor, as I didn't feel in sync with the culture and the environment. And I felt pretty fragmented and fractured as I sort of entered into my career path. And practice has been really important for me to find who I am within my work and in my world. It allows me to be present and to come back to me, to know myself, and to see what my triggers are and what the traps, you know, that come up for me, so I don't get quite so caught in them. I think just sitting in meditation and practicing mindfulness and awareness, I've just learned to notice much more quickly when things come up, like likes or dislikes, or just patterns that I get into, and it lets me see them more clearly, not get caught in them, and just do what I want to do more. And Dogen, Zen Master Dogen, in the Genja Koan, it's a line that I really like, says to study the way is to study the self, and to study the self is to forget the self. So I've really found that helpful, because just by practicing all of it helps me to know myself and study myself. And then the next step, of course, is to forget the self. And that's something that seems to happen in an inexplicable way. But it ties into the Buddhist concept of no self, which is a very helpful teaching. I also find it quite confusing. But that sense that there is no separate self, I think is really powerful. I spend a lot of my days in company with people who are who have great suffering, either physical or emotional. And I've often had a lot of trouble with feeling really overwhelmed and burdened by the suffering and the problems of other people. It can feel like a really weighty burden, especially when I have lots of my own suffering and issues going on. And the concept of no separate self, although it's kind of imponderable, it somehow means that it's not up to me as a separate person to solve problems or to heal someone else, that there isn't really any separation or difference. And we participate in healing. Its essence is love, it's not work. So when I don't feel responsible for others, I gradually learn not to turn away, not to turn away from suffering, and that there is no turning away. And it's then easier to allow space and presence for others, although they're not really others, to feel into their own pain. And that is where the source of transformation and wholeness is, and also the source of joy and love. Simply being present and being fully present, being able to listen, is very powerful. In my medical training, we get lots of practice and training and taking histories, that's what it's called. So finding out people's stories, you get really skilled at asking the questions and gathering a lot of information. But I find my Buddhist practice with just practicing being, and being with people, has really added a whole other dimension to that, being able to really listen on a deeper level to what's going on for people. And somehow just being able to hold that and sit in that attitude myself, I think allows other people to also be there and to listen to their own hearts more. So I've also found that the steadiness of practice gives me a platform from which to learn how to be with others in suffering, and also how to risk speaking when I have no words, those times where it's like, I don't know what to say. And somehow just that sort of platform allows me to have the courage to just step forward. It also gives me a refuge when I need a break or support. And I found that there's some techniques and practices that we do here in the Zendo and on Sesshin that I take with me as I go through my day. And I was thinking about those as I was thinking about doing this talk. And there's actually quite a few. I was surprised. I tend to invoke Kuan Yin pretty much on a daily basis. And she's the Bodhisattva of healing. And then sort of like the Buddhist saint of healing, I like to think of. And in the images that we see of her, she has many ears. Ears to hear the cries of people, and also many arms to reach out to be able to be of service. So I often imagine her sitting with me in the room and bringing compassion and equanimity. And she's always there to hear and not to abandon. And also at times I'll use the Tibetan practice of Tonglen, which we've practiced here a little bit. And it's a breathing technique, so when I'm in the presence of suffering and it feels like there's nothing to do about it, and it's a practice where you breathe in the suffering of yourself or other people, and then you breathe out relief or peace or healing. It's a very simple practice, but I can find it really grounding, and it seems to be very helpful in many situations. And it's also something you can do for a few breaths or all day, or it's pretty portable. And for the past 15 years, I've been working in palliative care, so spending time with people who are dying. And I feel that my experience with the kind of the deep stillness that you can feel, it's not always for me, but there's times we can touch to a really deep, quiet place. And even visiting it once or twice, the memory of it's always there. And I feel that that experience for me of that quiet is something which kind of drew me to working around death and dying. There's something that's vaguely similar about it, I think, when you're around death and dying, that with just touching into that real deep stillness. And I think it also allows me to stay present and draw near to that mystery. So often when I'm in the presence of somebody who is dying or has just died, I'll do some chants. And that's another thing I appreciate about our practice in Soto Zen, is the chanting we do and the repetition. And like through the years, I've chanted a lot of these things many, many times, so they're kind of part of my my bones now, in a way. So the two that I tend to chant, either out loud or to myself, depending if there's other people in the room and who they are, in the presence of death, is the Enmei Juku Kanan Gyo, which we often chant with a service. We didn't do that one today, but it tends to invoke the presence of Kanzeon or Avalokiteshvara Kanon. And it's for protecting life. And I love just the feeling of that chant and that presence. The other one, which we do in the Heart Sutra, is the Prajna Paramita, which is really helpful there. It's a gone, 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 beyond, beyond. Hail the goer. So those chants tend to bring me some comfort and to help bring a sense of reverence into a room when sometimes in a say, a hospital setting particularly, that can be seem a bit distant. Couple of other ways that practice I bring it into my work, and that's helped me, is I become more comfortable with leading kind of teaching meditation sessions, either with groups of patients or in healing circles. And if I hadn't been here and had the chance to do so much sitting myself and to do a bit of teaching, I don't think I would have had the courage to do that. And my own experience with meditation gives me the confidence that to know that others will also find it valuable. And it's great. I run a group for people with ADHD, college students, and they're not really used to sitting still a lot, but we always start the sessions with just a short mindfulness or meditation period, and it's really valuable for everybody. And other times, sometimes before I go into a situation that I feel challenging, I'll remind myself of my Dharma name. And when we do the ritual, which is sewing rakasu, it's a model of Buddha's robes, and taking the Buddhist precepts, we get given a Buddhist name, a Dharma name. So sometimes I'll remind myself what my name is when I'm faced with something where I've got a lot of insecurity coming up. And my Dharma name is given to me by my teacher, Norman Fisher, and it's Joko Eni, which means pure light, graceful healer. And then I remember that someone has seen these qualities or potentials in me, and I vow them to bring them with me when I come into that situation. So it helps me stay a bit more with the noble side rather than just the insecure side. I've always struggled a lot with roles and resisted roles, and I've always felt like a fake or an imposter, and I've greatly resisted the role of doctor, just the things that people assume about it, so much positive and negative. And I remember actually the day that I got accepted into medical school, I felt a difference in how people responded to me. I was like, oh my God. I've struggled with that a lot. And in our Soda Zen practice, you get lots of opportunity to have roles because of the rituals and the whole jobs. I found that challenging at first, and even things like ringing the bells or leading a chant or lighting incense, I'd feel like, oh, just putting this on, or who do I think I am, or am I doing it right, am I making mistakes? And it's given me lots of practice to just work with my reactions to roles. And so gradually I've sort of come to realize the serenity that can come from participating in a choreography with other humans, and the power of a collective intention to create and manifest something, you know, whether that's healing or community or teaching or spiritual practice. So that's been a real blessing for me to get there. And this, to end, I was at Kate's talk last week or the week before, and the question we have, it was on speaking our truth to power, and in our small groups we were asked, what keeps us from speaking our truth to power? And for me and for a lot of other people, the answer was fear. And then the other question was, well, what helps you to speak your truth? And for me, and part of that came up right away is practice, not in the sense of meditation practice right away, but just by doing it, you know, trying it, doing it over and over again, like anything, like playing the piano or learning to ski, just start doing it and practicing it. And also the other thing is being around other people that do that. So finding your community or people and being around people who honor truth and want to act truth and speak it, and seeing that role modeled over and over again. And so for me, I've really found that in my Zen Sangha, the community, I just see people who have that recognized Buddha nature, are called to the Dharma to practice things, and then come together in a community. So those two things, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, have been really helpful for me. At the end of my meditation period, each day I usually chant the refuges, and it kind of helps orient me towards the day. And I'm just going to end by saying those, the ones that I repeat. I take refuge in Buddha before all being, immersing body and mind deeply in the way. I take refuge in Dharma before all being, entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. I take refuge in Sangha before all being, bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrance.